Okay, party people at the Chaos West stage. Here is the next talk. It's a very nice talk, actually, performed by this great and beautiful Michael. He will talk about the Monjaro hardware wallet. So we're going to have actually some very nice pictures, live pictures from a camera taken from this hardware. It's going to be absolutely amazing. I'm hyped. Please, Mike, go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Nanook. Yeah, well, let's get started. I'm quite happy to follow the mobile wallet, which was given by M29. What's his name again? Anyway, we're going to be talking mostly about hardware wallets, and in particular, Monero hardware, showcasing the wallets that we have produced so far, prototypes. This is the very sparse description that I've put up here just to explain what the project is about, to answer the questions that people typically have. So this is what, okay, got cut off at the bottom. If you don't mind, we won't have a slide deck, okay? I'm quite lazy, so I don't like making slides. And this is online, so whoever wants to review it as we're talking can just go to this URL, ghostbin.com, paste EPMBK. It's a public Etherpad or Ghostpad or whatever. And that's all that we're going to have. It's going to be quite fast. This is my name, by the way, Michael Schlofen-Benevitz. You can call me Michael, just like it says right there. And I go by MSVB, usually online, when it's IRC or when we're chatting or something like that. So just like so many other other Monero groups, like Covery or Monero Software, we do our communication mostly in IRC channels. So you might have Monero-CCC for the planning for this event. You might have Monero-Dev for the development. And we also have Monero-Hardware, which looks like this. Dash Hardware. So you get the idea. That's the IRC channel. Anytime you have a question you want to pop into this channel, then you might get an answer, depending on which time zone you're living in. Anyway, so we can start with a bit of history, because the hardware project has not been around too long. Officially, it's been around since the 1st of October. It kind of started at DEF CON last year. 2017. This year's DEF CON in July in Las Vegas. That's where there was a Monero party. Quite nice one, high up on a hotel, in a hotel room. And I was meeting with a few other people. We decided to group into a hardware division, so to speak, and create something, a pilot project that would become the Monero hardware wallet. A lot of people believe that Monero is missing their own hardware wallet, so that's where it all began. And that's kind of the beginning of the project and the history. Now, the particular project we're working on, the hardware wallet, should last 6 months until we're able to provide a design. And what that means is that we're not planning to release a firmware that's full-featured and stable. We're not planning to release an enclosure or a case, if you'd rather, you know, plastic or aluminum or whatever it is. We're not planning to release quite a lot of things. We're focusing really right onto the circuits, the PCB, the printed circuit board, and the hardware design itself. So figuring out if we want to put an e-paper inside, if we want to have a battery, if we want to have a charging circuit, if we want to use a particular MCU, all of these decisions, we'd like to reach consensus on them and produce a design before the six-month frist, the six-month end of the project, which should be at the end of March. And where does that take us? It takes us right to about the 1st of April, but this is not a poisson d'avril. This is no joke. We probably will finish by then. We're on track and on time so far. And I believe that there is a CCC event that Easter Heck. It's about that time. I think it's going to be in Würzburg this year. So if you're all there in Würzburg for Easter Heck, you may see our release party. At least we're planning to do that. That means that at the end of March, if we're on time, we will have a Monero hardware wallet design. And I do have some prototypes here to show, because as we're creating the design, we need to test. And so we produce boards. But I do need to back up, because I did mention that the project started at DEF CON in Las Vegas, and that we talked a little bit about what other things you could do with hardware. And Monero is quite ambitious in a lot of ways. So we might be producing, for example, some year, some month, whenever, ATM machines, payment processors, specialized cards, smart cards that actually operate as wallets or as something else, or as security devices, or as signature verifiers, or you can use them to log into what, I don't know, an SSH server or something. A lot of other hardware wallets can already do that. But I'm just trying to point out that we may not only be making a wallet. So we just took care of that. This is what you have to do when you have no slides, right? And we took care of that. Right, now I guess we can take a look at what everybody wants to see. So my camera is not so good. I hope you can see this. So this is kind of what we may end up with, the form factor. And let me see if I can make this better here. Yeah, that's okay, I think. Anyway, so this is kind of what we want to end up with. This is not a Monero project. You probably recognize this, some of you folks, right? This is a Node MCU. So this is actually very different than anything we're planning to produce. This is a general purpose computer, but it's about the same size and format. You can make an enclosure for it. It has some holes, has some connectivity. We'll probably only use USB. This has a lot of RF. You can see the antenna there as well. God, this laser does not do the job. Anyway, and this is kind of an example of what we may end up with. So that was the other hardware. And there's another example of other hardware here. I think this time I will put a white piece of paper underneath. So that might be a bit easier to see with a paper, I think. I don't know. Anyway, so this is another piece of hardware which we created in the Monero Hardware Lab, but it's not a wallet. There we go. Yeah, so what we have here is basically, I call it a crypto shield, because all it does is provide crypto features to just about anything that it can connect with. This can be connected to an Arduino, a Raspberry Pi, anything with GPIO, with GPIO and I2C connectors. So that's the interface that's used on this, I2C, and the laser won't do the job, but you can see the secure elements. You can see the secure elements here in the middle. And what a secure element does is it basically offers you a lot of cryptography, a lot of crypto acceleration in hardware, and some features to basically lock down the appliance in altogether. It avoids the problem of reading secret keys out, because you can blow fuses that are internal to the chips, and then the secret key can never be read out again, these kind of things. So this is what we're experimenting with. And using these kind of devices, this is not a Monero device, but it's something similar. I'll go right ahead and show the first generation of Monero wallet that we have. This is a couple months old already. Like I said, the project is intended to end after 6 months. So we're almost halfway through. And this one is a couple months old. There's a lot of glare. Oh, if I stand right here, then it looks okay. Anyway, so this is the very bottom. This is the bottom of the PCB. That's why you don't see very many components. You can see some passives. These are resistors, I believe. No, these are capacitors and some other things, but this is the bottom. So let's turn it over and take a look at the parts that are, the cool parts are on top. And if I do this, this is kind of how it will be used. All right. So this is how this is one version, one variant of how the hardware wallet will look. It has a MCU in the middle. It has some input and output, some buttons. We might add one or not. It has an LCD or a OLED in this case. And of course, it has the very important logo there for the Monero hardware wallet. So if you are looking around for the programming interface, we have JTAG on here, and this is a very sleek and very nice, what are they called? I forgot the name of it, but pretty nice connector here, 1.27 millimeter spacing. And we've got a micro USB there for power and data. Like I said, we're doing most of the communication through USB, as so many other hardware wallets are. Anyway, so this was our first generation. It's quite large. If you want to compare size, this is a BeagleBone Black. So that's the size of a BeagleBone Black, which is similar to the size of a Raspberry Pi or something. Do you like BeagleBone Blacks? Okay. So we have some fans, not of the Monero hardware, but, well, okay, of other hardware. Anyway, so this is the one. Okay, this is a size and the form factor that we're kind of looking at for a developer edition. So we're already considering having more than one Monero hardware wallet, one for the developers, which appreciate large connectors and maybe micro USB, which is easier to work with. And on top of that, if you know anything about side channel attacks and analysis, glitching and clock-based attacks, CPA, correlation power analysis, all these kind of things. There's a really cheap device that helps you do this analysis called the Chip Whisperer. And the Chip Whisperer has a accessory board that accepts a UFO format PCB, and that's exactly the format that we chose to use here. So we can just drop this into a Chip Whisperer and do analysis directly without doing any wiring at all. And that's why we're going to keep this form factor the way it is. This is going to be locked down in code, and this is our developer edition. So we'll get wild and crazy on the developer edition. We probably won't consider a lot of use cases that, for example, border crossings and so on. Okay, we'll do that in firmware, but this is more of a consumer feature for us. So moving on to, where are we anyway? Okay, we're on Monero hardware. We can X this one out. Now we're on Monero hardware. And, right, so what is the current state of Monero hardware? Here is our panelization of the consumer edition. I can't even fit it in there. I mean, can you kind of see that? Maybe I should just do this. So this is a panel of hardware wallets. There's 10 hardware wallets on there, and this is what we get back from the printer. And then once we receive this, we either hand solder it one by one, or we slip it into a pick and place machine after stenciling a solder on there. I apologize that I can't show all of the steps. I didn't bring my pick and place machine with me in this suitcase. They're rather large. Anyway, but this is kind of what it looks like close up. Let's see if I can block off the glare. Stand just right. You see that cool gold? I just think that's excellent. Anyway, the things look kind of okay. And this is the consumer edition. It's a lot smaller, as you can tell. There's still JTAG on there, even though it's a consumer edition. That slanted row. And you can see where the buttons are going to come on there. Those are those two blocks there. And then at the top, that's where we solder on a plastic header for the screen. And in the middle, you can't see the laser, can you? But anyway, in the middle is the part that's the most important part. It's this MCU, the microcontroller unit. And after we solder everything on there, it looks like this. So, right, I can even put two of them on there. Actually, I can't do that. Well, you get the idea. And yeah, that's another thing that we sometimes have to do. We sometimes have to create our own test harness and debug cables. So I made this special electro-wonk about 4 days ago because I had some problems with the USB-C connector. USB-C connectors are a real pain. If you're developing hardware and you're considering going to USB-C, yes, do it. But plan on spending a lot of time getting that right. USB, a micro USB or mini USB, all of these old standards that are about a year old, you just need to get four contacts right. You need the two data and then the power and the ground. I mean, there's five contacts, I think, but you only need to get four of them right. With the USB-C connectors, you need 24 contacts and they're smaller. So it's just ridiculously difficult to get that perfect when you're soldering underneath the chip. And anyway, that's why I made this electro wonk that you see there. And on the end of the electro wonk, if you're curious, that's how it looks. I just kind of stripped the wires in order to test. So that's a little anecdote. But here you can kind of see the difference. The bottom row, that's before they're populated. The wallets are populated with ICs, with chips and components. And the top is where it's populated. You can even see the plastic headers where the screens pop in. Maybe I should kind of slant that. Hey, that's pretty cool. I like the slanting action there. And so, what does a screen look like when you... I'm not going to plug it in, but that's kind of how they look. The whole idea with these plastic headers, they're not elegant. Like this one, has a soldered on screen. You can tell from the FPC, the fine pitch connector here, that's soldered on. It's much more elegant and it's flat. It lays flat and it's nice. But we can't use those when we're doing testing. We're trying to send devices out so people can produce firmware for them or test or give opinions, feedback, and so on. And if we just keep sending devices out with the screen soldered on, first of all, that means a lot more hand soldering for us. Real pain. And second of all, we're spending on extra screens that people already have. So the answer to that, we think, is to just purchase these screens that are mounted onto a PCB, and they have pins, and then we just pop those on the wallet, and the next wallet that we send out to that same tester, we don't send a new screen out. They just use their old one. So that's kind of the idea. All right, and so that's kind of how it looks. You can probably tell the one in the middle there, I started desoldering parts from it because there was a loop of some kind somewhere. It was I could tell that ground was connected to power over the USB circuit. So I just started debugging, and that's kind of how it looks when you get things wrong. And then I guess I could show these two, which are actually working. And that's kind of how finished prototypes look. I mean, sometimes we decide to slant the screen, you know, for like a Ferrari red slanted, you know, spoiler look. That's really, really cool. Or sometimes we just do it like that. That's a little easier. You can get underneath the screen and push things around and connect leads. So these USB-C connectors, not everybody has a USB-C cable, and that's why there's these adapters. If you look carefully, well, it's not going to work, but it's actually a USB-C to USB, micro. So that's what we're sending out now to Monero community in order to test and get feedback. I guess I can probably do a demo before we get into questions. Right, and so I'm not sure which one I'll demo. I guess I'll do this one. And what do I need? I need some power. There we go. All right. I don't know. So I've got to stand in the right place. So, yeah. The problem with OLED screens and focusing on cameras, you can tell what the problem is, right? There's no focus problem because you can see the text on the PCB. It's just impossible to read. What it says, I can read it myself. It says Monozor, Monozor HW hardware wallet by DFU. So this is the first firmware that we produced ourselves and were able to program the board over DFU or device firmware update, which is, I'm not sure if it's a standard, but it's a typical procedure that that you use if you want to avoid JTAG programming and kind of more esoteric SWD or things like that. So it's much easier. You can do everything with a USB cable. And that's why we kind of celebrated by printing that onto the screen. And that's almost the only thing it does. I mean, it doesn't seem like a lot, but just getting the tool chain right and the programming and the DFU and so on, believe me, that's quite a task to celebrate. We did that. And then we do have two buttons. So let's see if you can see that when I push the one button, let me see where, can't see where I'm pushing. There it is. So if I push there, so now when I push the button, I'm going to read it again. It says left button. And if I push the other button, it says, guess what? Right button. Left button, right button, left button, right button. If I push them both, oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if the BeagleBone Black can do that, by the way. It's really... So let's see what happens if I push them both. What do you think will happen? You think it'll crash the board? Okay, let's see. I'm going to push them both. Oh, okay. The last one that went down is the one that gets displayed. No, it's the left one. Well, it didn't start a fire, so I'm happy about that. Anyway, so that's kind of as far as we've gotten with the firmware. Oh, yeah. And we're going to keep working on the firmware, but like I said before, a priority is on the hardware design, right? I can do the same thing with these smaller Ferrari style. I made them red because it's kind of the holiday season, you know, red. I don't know. Does that make sense? But, there's plenty of styles and colors we can choose. I can show all of them. You know, if you want to see any of these others working, you just need to come back to the Monero stand because it's kind of repetitive. So we'll get back to here, and we finished that. So what most people ask when we're talking about this winter online just in general, kind of the five top questions are, why should there be another hardware wallet? Because there are others. There's like KeepKey. Okay, so I'm not sure if KeepKey will be with us in another year. It looks maybe, I don't want to say anything bad, but I haven't seen too much development there. There are some answers to the question, why another wallet? The trouble with that is you need to line up a group of 20 individuals and ask them that same question. You will get about 15 different answers or groups of answers. And after you do that, you will finally have a good overview of why the world doesn't need another wallet and why the world does need another wallet. So it's really, I'm going to avoid the question for now. I assume that the same answers that applied as the second hardware wallet came in existence apply for this situation just as well. There are many more than two hardware wallets at this time, and as long as they all diverge from features and, I don't know, operational models, price, freedom, open source or not, these kind of things, I think it's just fine that there are differences and that we have a flourishing ecosystem of hardware as well as software. I can't imagine anybody saying we should have only one or two cryptocurrencies, right? This is bad that we have a flourishing ecosystem of cryptocurrency technology based on blockchain and with various types of software. And that's kind of the same answer that I would provide, but that's just me. I'm just one person. Don't trust me, but that's my answer to why another wallet. And speaking of differences and diverging features, so we will have some things. We integrated USB-C before there was any other hardware wallet design that incorporated USB-C, for example. That's just one example. If we put an e-paper display in, which means that you can still read the public address or the public the public information of a person of an individual's wallet, even when it's disconnected from USB, even when the battery's dead. So that would be a feature. We're kind of fighting with features like that because sometimes somebody wants to turn off all information. And how would they do that if the battery's dead and the e-paper is continuing to display it? But you get the idea. There's quite a lot of features that are yet to be integrated into other hardware wallets on the market. And so that's kind of what differentiates the Monero hardware wallet from other contenders. Lots of people want to buy one, or they want to get in line to buy one, or these kind of questions. No, sorry. There's no way to buy one. But maybe after we have a design, after Easter Egg, and if you pay attention, maybe talk to Monero folks, they can point you in the right direction. Even before then, if you want to test or help out or contribute in any way, looking at documentation, making photos and uploading to a blog or plugging in your JTAG programmer to see if it works, etc., you're probably way up on the list to receive a prototype device in the mail if you provide your mail address, which is a big problem we have in Monero. Nobody wants to do that. So anyway, so that's about the trouble with purchasing, and what if I lose it? So these are the kind of questions we get sometimes, which are based on firmware and features that are in the software, or the host software running on a computer, or the type of USB cable, or these kind of things that don't apply too much to the hardware design. So obviously, if you lose your hardware wallet, then you will have the same ease of recovery or problems of loss as any other hardware wallet. They basically all offer some kind of backup feature and security system where you're in control of your data, even if you lose a hardware wallet. But this and many other similar questions depend on a firmware being established and well-tested and available. We don't have that. So it's hard or almost impossible to answer these type of questions. You can still ask them. I don't mind. We can find the answers together, right? And then how do I participate? If I really like this idea, we're a very open group. Everything is open source, even the process. So the project plan, the disclaimer, which is a legal document, which basically says, yes, I want to receive a wallet in the post or something. All of that stuff, the members list, we have about 30 members in our group. Everything is out in the open, and we have never signed an NDA and don't plan to. In fact, it's a requirement not to do so. NDA is a non-disclosure agreement. We have no secret processes or secret decisions or secret meetings, anything like that. No secret contracts. So if you like that idea, I mean, that's kind of a unique thing in the hardware market in general and wallets as well. Then the question becomes, how do I participate? And I can answer that pretty easily because let's get rid of this discover here. So this is going to be hard to read, I think. It's kind of small, right? But I'll read it to you. In fact, I'll put this, in fact, you don't, You don't have to write that down because it's in the Etherpad. If you just got this URL right at the very top, the second one down, that's where we have our Taiga system, which is a project management system. It's not only open source, but you can actually own the data and have it in your internal infrastructure. That's what Monero kind of likes. Monero doesn't like when there's a Slack type of system where maybe you do own the data or maybe you don't, but it's not inside your control, right? So this is in the control of a corporate group somewhere in the world with a group of servers that follow a type of policy. Anyway, so Taiga is better in that sense. If you like self-control over your project, then that's what you do, and that's what we've got here. Here's some projects, for example. M204950, I think is his name. And the nice fellow, the very bright fellow that showed off the mobile wallet, he has a project here as well. I think it's probably, where is it? Must be here. Okay, well, I don't see it, but it's here as well. And like, here's the project that we have for planning this event and our table back over there, the 34C3. And this is the project that I'm talking about now, the RFC Hardware Wallet 1 design. So I'm just going to click on that, and that brings me to, well, you get the idea. This is how it looks, and then this is the timeline. This is kind of what a chronological order of what's been happening. This is a great way to get familiar with the development side of things. So here's a person who just signed on. He's going to do mechanical engineering, wants to at least. Mechanical engineers, they're kind of responsible for enclosures, so they'll probably be making designs. Oh, you know, I forgot to show that we do have a half design of a mechanical enclosure. See that nice acrylic there? If I just block the light off, you can see that. So that's kind of half of an enclosure. That's the very start of an enclosure anyway. So we're getting started on that too. Just because it's not a requirement doesn't mean we're not interested. So this is another thing that's not a requirement, is RF or radio frequency interfaces. I think most or maybe none of us like the idea of having radio frequency involved in hardware wallets. It's just too yucky. I mean, okay, theoretically you can lock it down, it's be secure. I don't know. So, but we're still experimenting with that for a number of reasons. We might be forced into using a chip that has an RF interface, Bluetooth and NFC. And if we do that, then we'll probably make use of the NFC mostly, so that you can have a wallet-to-wallet protocol where, you know, you're tapping another device and receiving an address, a public address, or you want to pay your friend, so you tap your two devices together, and that's how each device knows what to send and what to receive. When would you want that? If you want to avoid optical character recognition in QR codes, if you realize that there's cameras all over the room, then you don't really want to hold your phone out or something with a QR code, a piece of paper or something. You might be able to use an NFC circuit in that case to avoid detection, if you'd like to remain anonymous. I mean, it's not the perfect method, because there's plenty of ways to defeat that as well, but it's just another option. Those are features that we're looking at. Another thing we're looking at, if you take a look at the left-hand corner, it says Ledger Blue Port. So we're always interested in porting designs from other contenders and then mixing it up and then taking some portions of their design, putting 10% of the Trezor in, putting 10% of the Ledger in, maybe putting 50 or 60% of our own ideas in, and then removing 20% of those, mixing it up like that. Or Shift Devices has an excellent wallet called... The Bitbox, right? That's kind of cool. It has very unique stuff on there, like a capacitive touch element and a cut-through board LED that's very bright. I like it a lot. It has an SDHC card. So everyone is a bit different, and we're thinking about borrowing or contributing, you know, this very interactive method of working with these groups and, yeah, sharing features. So that's what we're doing here with the Ledger, for example. Then we've got a person came on as a tester, another revision of that port. Here's a person who was working on logos. more boring stuff, probably project planning for me. So this is what we saw before. I mentioned how cool that gold looks. It costs a bit more to put gold on there. That's real gold, by the way. It's real gold. But, you know, I mean, we're Monero, right? It's worth it, isn't it? You have to do it if you're Monero. The next board, it'll be a different color. I don't know. What do you think? This is what I need. We need to figure out the color of the next prototype board. I mean, it can be green. It can't be red because it's not Christmas anymore. But it could be like black. It could be green, blue. Orange is not available. Yellow, you like yellow? Yellow is available. Oh, yellow for Easter. Like eggs. Okay, right. Oh, by the way, the guy that likes black BeagleBone Blacks, he's not here anymore. He got really bored, I think. And this is what the panels look like when we get them from the printer. We put some other freebies in the holiday packages. Those are Signets, which are made by another excellent hardware group. They basically just sign. What does a Signet do? I've actually forgotten. I haven't put one together yet. Has anybody bought or assembled a Signet? I believe, they sign things. So they do some cryptography. So this is the programming portion. We're doing this with a FlySwatter 2, which is also open. I'm not sure if it's open source hardware, but they're very open people. They make their own stuff, and it's rather good. You can see it says JTAG debugger there. Then we have a logo there and more board examples. And this is kind of what we thought it might look like for the holiday send-off of prototypes, blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of answering the question, how do I get started? Whoops. Which is here, how do I participate? Now, to make it even easier, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. There's a wiki here. You can kind of take a look at the documentation. The requirements are here. We have a set of requirements. If you want to get familiar with the project more, we've been interviewed by journalists on a number of occasions. Really cool designs there. I love this picture with a blueprint in the background and a microscope. Oh, I just love that. Yeah, and our good friend Anonymal, who is the chief Covery developer, he kind of got us started in this and made all of the personal connections in DEF CON in Las Vegas last year or this year. So that's kind of the first interview that we had with a journalist. He was on board and kind of hanging out. That's why he's part of the picture there. Yeah, these are the requirements. I mean, it's kind of a long document. Some of these things might be a bit boring. But functional requirements, like obviously we're going to take 5-volt power from USB. We're going to have a 3-volt battery housing. This could be come in handy if we use a very low powered MCU for a detethered operation of some sort with a reduced functional, reduced features. But we can detether. We can no longer have USB and the thing is still working. So there's some. I'm not going to go through this, but you know, you get the idea that there are some well-documented requirements there. So, and here's the program I was talking about, where you can receive a device and test it and give your opinion. You can say this is really not as good as a BlackBerry, as a BeagleBone Black. I'd rather have a Raspberry Pi. Anyway, and yeah, if you do decide that this is for you, you just need to read this part. Right, and it basically involves saying, yes, I want, I've read the disclaimer, and I live here, and you should send me a board. And then you sign it in any way you want. In fact, it tells you how to sign it using the Monero software here somewhere. I find that really, really cool. Wait a minute. How do I sign it? Somewhere it shows you. I can't find it now. Yeah, but the Monero software can be used to sign generic text. I mean, we all know that this is possible from the Bitcoin client as well. It's easy to do. But I just find that a very elegant method. All right, so say that you want to get in touch with us. You don't know how or you don't. So there's a button here at the very bottom that says Meet Up. I don't know why it says Meet Up, but if you click on that, Then another window opens, and you're sent to the Mattermost channel. This is actually bridged to IRC. So if you don't have an IRC client, if you don't know what IRC is, or you don't like it or whatever, then you can use this. And this is similar to Slack, but it is it's an in-house type of thing where you don't lose control over your data, right? So we prefer that, I think. And yeah, you have to be signed in to get this screen. You need an account, but it's quite easy to set up the account. It's about a 1 minute procedure. And the way I saw that is by going here and clicking on Meetup, right? And there's all these other things. You can see who's on the team, for example, blah, blah, blah. There I am, I'm Michael. And online, I'm MSVB. There's the issues, bug reporting, the wiki. There's a kind of a sprint type of, agile methodology type of project planning here. So, well, for example, there's a technical familiarization sprint, and then it loads that, and you just kind of check out the tasks that are involved. Some of these are finished. Some are still in progress. So here I had to order trial components, for example. Blah, blah, blah. You get the idea. There's epics. I don't even know what an epic is. And then back to the timeline. So that's how you get involved in the project or how you learn more about it, regardless of if you want to get involved or not. And I think we're done. Whoops. Stay. Yeah, so that was how do I participate. And if anybody has new questions or if you have a request, if you want to see another device start working or something else, then off to you. There's a question there. Thank you.
Hey, Michael. That was a nice talk. I love the close-on pictures of your hardware. Is it okay if I, as usual, ask three questions first, or do you really want to go ahead? No, let's go with your guys' questions first. Meet me right there. If you want to ask a question on stage, you can, but you will be on screen and on the internet. Just wait a second. We do have time. There's no rush.
Here, I'll pass this. You can pass this around. Take a look. I can't get past the speakers, but if someone comes up. I have more than two. I think I have three.
Hey. Thanks, Michael, for the talk. Just wanted to know from the chip design if this is Monero only or if this supports all crypto node coins.
Yeah, that's a good question. So the optimistic perspective that I would like to offer is that anybody can code to support more than just Monero. Yeah, there's another one. That's a first generation. The green one is the first generation. So I would hope that whoever had an interest in Zcash would try to find a way to pack that into the program storage and then run it from the bootloader and see what happens. In so many cases, you can just basically take code from a GitHub repository, and that's 3/4 of everything you need to do to port a competing cryptocurrency onto, for example, a mining rig or a hardware wallet. I mean, there are some problems that do impede from making this crossover. Monero has some very unique crypto algorithms. Like, for example, we don't use the SEKP256K1 curve, which is what's used in Elliptic Curve digital signature algorithm, or ECDSA. We use a different one. So that one that I just mentioned, the SEK256P1, that's what's used by Ethereum, by Litecoin, by Bitcoin, by I think almost everything. I mean, you guys are pros, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if there's maybe 100 different cryptocurrencies, then maybe 90 or 95 of them use exactly that curve, that elliptic curve. Now, Monero uses a different one, which is called ED25519, as well as curve 25519. So the one is a Montgomery curve, and the other is an Edwards curve. They're basically very, very different than the Bitcoin and the others. So you're kind of stuck with that if we choose, for example, a secure element that can only support that, or that's gonna be one thing that's difficult to people porting other cryptocurrencies. On the other hand, it's probably not the case that we restrict our secure element to just that one curve. So who knows? Another thing that I'd like to mention, a lot of hardware wallets are trying to do everything at once, and they're packing in all kinds of cryptocurrencies into a single application. I think that's fine, but it kind of gets wild and crazy, and especially if you have limited... Yeah, thank you. Yes! Let's get excited. So, especially if you have limited program storage, which is 512 kbytes on these MCUs, you can't do very much with that. So if you have ring signatures and confidential transactions and stuff like that happening inside and programmed on that MCU, it might be pretty challenging to implement other types of cryptocurrency models based on other elliptic curves on top of that. I would say go for it, and I hope you do it. We will be very supportive in that we will try to overestimate. Underestimate? We're going to underestimate the resources required for implementing a hardware wallet. So hopefully you all and me and everybody will have more than we need in order to put another cryptocurrency inside.
Thank you.
So is the hardware free, lossless? Lossless open source? Is it FLOSS?
Yes, it is. Okay. It follows the CERN license, which is very common for hardware projects. And I've actually forgotten because we don't have an official firmware and host software portion in this project, we have not defined software licenses. We've only defined hardware licenses, and they're fully open source. If you read the CERN license, It has a poison pill. It has all the stuff that you really like to see in an open source license.
Thanks for the talk. I have a question more about software. You haven't spoken a lot about it, but who's writing the firmware for this hardware, and how is that project?
Can you repeat that?
Who is writing the firmware for this hardware?
So there are a few people doing that. At least, I think the best answer to that is that there is no firmware component to the project. So if we have firmware, in this case, it's to allow us to test, you know, just that left button, right button. So we don't have an official firmware group. There is a set of people, three or four, I believe, in that list of team members, and they have a role set to them that's not mechanical engineering, it's not design, it's firmware, it's coding. I think that's what we call it. I think you're asking a different question, though. You don't want to know if there's team members that have a role set to coding. You'd like to know where maybe the GitHub repository is and how that's proceeding, right?
No, I was thinking, what's the status of the software side? I mean, you have to have the hardware first, but then to have something working, you need the software side as well. So that was my question. What's the status of that?
Yeah, the status is that it's on our minds that we agree with you that we need software and firmware after the hardware is done. And we also know that there's some disagreement as well at how much firmware and software we need up front in order to produce a valid and good hardware design. Do we need to have these efforts going in parallel, for example? And we really haven't reached a decision on that. But first of all, in our GitHub repository, which is under the Monero-project, I won't mention it. Okay, I'll mention it's called Secura, but this name is going to change. Anyway, so under that subdirectory, there is a sub-subdirectory that's firmware. And so it will go in there, and if you're wondering, well, why don't we start with a firmware? Why haven't we finished enough firmware? Consider that most contending groups that are producing hardware wallets, they're doing this with 5 or 10 team members. They're well-financed. They have a list of customers, and they still cannot produce and begin taking orders for a new generation of hardware without working for 2 years. So most groups need 2 years between the time that they start conceiving a new design and they're actually ready to send that order off to Shenzhen or wherever, whoever's doing the assembly and printing. We're trying to do this in a very kind of CCC chaotic manner, in a very loosely coupled, loosely structured, in 6 months. So there's no room in there to actually do the firmware and the enclosure and the modding and a lot of other things. So that's kind of a sloppy answer, but and there's another abstract answer as well, that whoever gets on IRC and says, I know exactly how to code firmware, and I can provide, 10 files that, you know, we can do a nice hello world type of Flappy Birds thing on there just to show that everything's working right, and we can integrate portions of the open source code from other projects, and I can help with that. That's kind of what we need, and that would accelerate development of firmware as well. But we're focusing on hardware, and that's why we don't have features that are typical of a hardware wallet at this time. We've only been working at it for about 2 months, 2.5 months.
It's over there.
Thanks, Michael, for the talk. I'm curious about the history of the project from a social community perspective. Can you tell a little bit how the project went from an initial idea to a current group of a fairly large group of contributors and testers?
Yeah. It's I kind of intentionally shortcut the history portion because it doesn't interest that many people. So one thing that's worth mentioning, though, is that before I came on at DEF CON in July, there were other people working on firmware adaptations of Monero source code for existing hardware wallets. And these came kind of pretty close to producing something usable for Monero. And they died off in the end, or something happened where it just didn't work out. So that's kind of the prehistoric existence of a Monero hardware wallet for us, the community. So I guess I was the first team member to come on. And the few people that I had met in DEF CON, yeah, you can read the article. It's actually inside. There's Endogenic, Anonymous, Fluffy Pony. They know their way around the project very well, and they were very encouraging about my idea to do something with hardware, and that a wallet would be the perfect place to start. And I had just came from the Black Hat, a Black Hat workshop where I had produced my own hardware. I showed actually the board, the one with the secure elements. So I was really enthusiastic. That's kind of the start for me of the project. And once it got traction in the community, and a lot of people, there was incredible, there was a lot of hate talk on Reddit. We got past that. We got past a lot of boundaries and things in order to kind of get the idea that the community agreed that we should have a hardware wallet that the Monero community controlled and owned, because there's a copyright on all documents. It says the copyright the Monero project year. So that's kind of the history and the cultural development, if you'd like, of the project. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
In what sense, in what regard do hardware wallets add value to Monero, to the use case? How would it benefit the value of Monero?
Yeah, so how will a hardware wallet add value to the Monero community ecosystem, technology in general, right? So some people don't know this, but Monero is more a project than anything else. It's not only a cryptocurrency. It's not just something on a ticker that you'll see that's you know, a value that you can exchange. It's actually a collection of projects. So what we have, which I'm quite excited about, is called Covery, which is a generic anonymization layer similar to Tor. We've got things like Open Alias, which is also under the umbrella of Monero, which allows you to exchange addresses without those crazy long numbers or optical recognized QR codes, which are captured by cameras or anything else. You just know the email address of your friend, and that's their addresses. Their XMR Monero address as well. And there's all these different projects. There's a number of them. And they all add just a bit of value. This is the way I see things, that a lot of these people, they have different reasons for starting and maintaining their projects, but each of these projects strengthens the ecosystem as a whole, right? So what you end up with is a higher valued technology in general. So you have these developers that are very well known. They're writing the daemon, the servers, and the clients, and they deserve a lot of praise. But what we also have around are people writing books, ebooks, you know, hardware wallets, and I think that they intrinsically add value to the whole technology.
Go ahead. I see that point, but I would like to question you, though, to like give us a concrete example where you could imagine a hardware wallet being of value, right, on the market, on the street, here at our club. What could it be? Where would your project, your hardware-based project, add value?
Okay, I'm not sure if I understand the question. It's not about
use
the
case.
Price.
No, it's only about use case. How would I imagine it being used out there?
Right. Well, I could possibly rephrase the question. How do hardware wallets of any kind protect the value of a person's virtual wallet of this virtual currency, right? Because you can have brain wallets, you can have all kinds of different wallets. Why does there have to be something with silicon parts?
Or two-factor authentication like Google Authenticator does, right? It's quite secure already, so why would I want to add to that?
Well, I mean, two-factor authentication without a token that you actually own that's physical is kind of hard to imagine, right? So you have to have some hardware to make two-factor work. And this is the same type of model that makes a hardware wallet of any kind protect and secure a wallet in general. So without that hardware, you still have a wallet. It can be a paper wallet that gets burned if your house burns down. You can get a bank, you know, bank vault, and then they have control over your hardware. You see the point? But a hardware wallet kind of adds value in the sense that it's another type of protection that you can choose to use in securing your hardware wallet. I think that if you're a super person, a super woman, or a super man, then you have a mobile wallet, and you have a hardware wallet, and you have a brain wallet, and you have a paper wallet, and you have a crypto steel, and you have all of these different things. Okay, that's actually the best situation, because if anything fails, I mean, you can argue about it because it actually increases the attack vector as well. But so this is the arrangement that you can choose from. If hardware wallets don't exist, then we do lose value in general, not just in Monero, but everywhere, because you have less choice, and they do play an important role in securing hardware, just as two-factor authentication tokens, whatever they are, play a role in securing, you know, your access control to whatever server software. And you didn't ask the question, but I'll answer it anyway. So some people like to know, this kind of goes along the lines of the can I buy one? One of the requirements is to make this technology real cheap, real nice on the pocketbook. So you can order one or assemble one yourself. You can pay for one just to experiment, and you can pay for six. You can buy six of them. I mean, if some of the hardware wallets on the market, they cost about 300 euros, and they do one thing well. They protect your wallet. They do the same thing as the cheaper ones. So we're considering figuring out a way to have hardware wallets be produced and go onto the market so that you can pay 10 or 20 euros for one. So maybe less if we get a sponsor on board, you know, and you can buy 5 or 10 of them.
Yeah, for me, that's the essential point of your pitch there, that the current devices cost about 300 euros, and you're about to lower the costs 100-fold, 10-fold, I don't know, somewhere between that, right? That's nice. That's nice. That adds value, of course, yeah.
It's nice for some people. Most of the people in the hardware wallet market, they're making a lot of money right now.
Right?
Because their technologies are so expensive. You know, we're actually very good friends with the competition. We travel out to Prague. We travel to Sweden. To Switzerland, to Zurich. We'll probably make a trip to Paris. All these places producing wallets. And I've talked to people on the phone and even other non-wallet technology like OpenDime. It's just very nice to interact with them because they're very friendly people and most are pretty supportive. I mean, they lock their technology down. There is no hardware wallet available for purchase or anything that has a pure open source model where they open source and everything's free. All the documentation, the procedures, the project plan, the roadmap, and so on. There is no other. So we respect that as well. We don't go out to Zurich and say, hey, you know, your schematic, I mean, it's probably defective because why would you otherwise lock it down and close it? Yeah, we don't do that. We're friends. And so I can't remember what question I'm answering now. Probably blabbing. It's probably time to close this off, isn't it? Any other questions?
Okay, give it up for Michael one more time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you from the depth of my heart, because you grilled him very, very good, better than I could ever do in the hot chair.
And if you want to know more about Monero, there are about 10 or 12 features that are very easy to learn about. You just have to walk back to the table there. You get this poster. We have enough for you. You can take one home. And it's really very well made, don't you think? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I absolutely love it. Michael, right. 10 reasons.
Okay.
So people were wondering, sometimes we pass around chocolate, just pass it on. People bring food here. I don't know them sometimes. Sometimes they are my friends. That's how we do it here in the CCC. Also, thank you for bringing back all the hardware. Is this all the hardware?
Yes. Thank you.
This is very friendly. I love this friendly community. This is a last reminder. We have one more talk later on. What does it say? Something about networking, scalability, and privacy. It's going to be right here.
Yeah.
We still have some free slots. If you have a presentation, a topic, or something that's just your personal kink, contact me or the team. We are more than thankful to give you a stage. We have cameras and audio, and you get all the files to take home and to show your friends. Everybody wants to hold a talk on the Congress, right? So you can do this here. Thank you, and see you later.